Good morning, and thank you for joining us on the Capitalist Report. My name is Leo Knepper, and I'm the CEO of the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. If you want to learn more about CAP, please visit our website at www.empowerpa.org. Joining me today is a friend of ours from the General Assembly. He's calling in. This is Representative Aaron Bernstein. He is from House District 10. Aaron, tell us a little bit about your district.
Leo, first and foremost, thanks so much for having me on and excited to talk about some of the issues facing Pennsylvania. I'm in the 10th Legislative District, which is all the way in the west. So if you got on the turnpike and you drove as far as you could, my farm is about 3 miles from the Ohio line on the right-hand side. So if you're going to drive by, y'all can beep and wave. And that covers part of Lawrence, Beaver, and Butler County.
Okay. So fairly rural.
Yeah, it really interesting districts, and I say I almost have two separate districts where I have three rural municipalities that are more city-esque. I wouldn't call them cities, right? It's not Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, but downtown areas with apartments and those types of things. And then I have a rural area out where I live and where a lot of the other part of my district is. And, it's probably 60 rural and 40% more urban.
Okay. So a nice, almost a snapshot of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and I think it gives me some really good insight into Pennsylvania as a whole, where it allows me to relate to other representatives that cover those different areas. So it's pretty unique, and I'm very fortunate to be here and serve these people to the best of my ability.
Yeah, and we first met you the first time you ran for office, and our political action committee, just for full disclosure, was supportive of your campaign then, and we've been involved through our PAC since then. And we've really been happy with the work that you've done in Harrisburg. And today, what we wanted to focus on was the budget that just passed. And by the time this show airs, if it hasn't been signed already, it will be signed, by the governor by the time the show airs.
Yep.
So I guess, first of all, did you notice any differences this time around versus the other budgets that you had worked on, or what was the process like this time?
Yeah, I think, one of the things that I continually am concerned about is the lack of information that is available to representatives, and I don't know if that's senators as well, but obviously only being in the House, I know that you don't really even find out what's in it until the day or the day before that you're going to vote for it. And to me, we all have the same job. There's 203 of us. By the way, I would argue that's way too many of us. But there's 203 of us, and we all represent 62,000 constituents, and we ought to have the opportunity to understand and evaluate that budget well prior to actually voting on it. So the process isn't something that I'm in love with, but I'll share with you. I think that our leadership team did a good job on some aspects of it and trying to hold some spending down where, to me, at the end of the day, it just wasn't enough. And we have in Pennsylvania, and it's not called this, but I call it the shadow budget. And that is where items are moved offline into special funds. And there was hundreds of millions of dollars that was moved into these offline funds. And ultimately, it came out that the spending in Pennsylvania with this new budget, regardless of what any politician will tell you, is an increase of about 4%. And maybe even a little bit higher, depending on the way you calculate it. And I'm growing consistently concerned of the fact of that we continue to spend people's money, more and more of their money, and we're going to ask people to pay four more percent every year for the expenses of the Commonwealth. And I know that with this, let me just continue 1 second, and then I'll answer your next question. But I think the other thing on this is the following. People say, well, hey, Aaron, hold on, there wasn't a tax increase. Well, that sounds great, but when you're spending more, eventually you're going to have to get that money from somewhere.
Yeah, and that was really one of our concerns with the budget as well. We're supporters of, it goes by different names, a Taxpayer Protection Act, a Taxpayer Bill of Rights, where the growth in spending is held to, inflation plus population growth. And this budget was at least double that number. This increased spending at a rate far faster than inflation. You know, and depending, as you mentioned, there's all kinds of accounting gimmicks with moving money into the shadow budget.
Right.
Governor Wolf last year overspent by $750 million what the approved budget was. There is nothing in place to prevent that kind of overage from happening again this year. That money was just automatically paid out. So, you know, we came into the budget, the headline number was, you know, we had an $850 million surplus. You know, we taxes collected higher than what they thought. But really, when you looked at the amount of money that Governor Wolf spent unapproved, you know, that surplus went down to about $100 million, which is just really, really unfortunate. And I mean, I know that the House has passed some legislation to kind of address those issues with the governor's kind of unfettered spending abilities, you know, with unapproved budget items. Are you aware of, or, you know, do you know if, obviously, you know, you're in the House, but have you heard about any movement from the Senate in any interest in kind of reining that in?
Well, one of the, you know, I think we have some good momentum in the House of Representatives, and that's led by folks. Ryan Warner has done a really nice job with that piece of legislation. I think in Pennsylvania we call it the Taxpayer Protection Pledge or Taxpayer Protection Act, and you know, that is a thing for me. I'm beyond supportive of. I'm a co-sponsor, and I think Ryan, he first off, he's an exceptional conservative legislator, and I'm proud to work with him. The second thing is I'm growing concerned that whenever I look over at the Senate, they continue to do and spend more money than is ever imaginable. And one of the things are they have these WAMs called walking around money, where they have these special funds that are there, and they allocate them for personal pet projects. These pet projects are there simply to go get people reelected. And I think that, you know, people deserve better than that in Pennsylvania. And, you know, I'll continue to stand up for those things. And it doesn't always make me the most popular guy in the room, like you and I have talked before. But to me, you have to stand on principle. You have to do what's right. And you always have to step up. And at the end of the day, I work for these 62,000 people here. And I take that commitment very, very seriously. And for far too long, we've had politicians that have kicked the can down the road and not stepped up to make tough decisions. That's just not what I'm about.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, you mentioned the WHAMs, and there's also – I was looking at the fiscal code, which is kind of a secondary part of the budget. And in there are quite a few earmarks, and not surprisingly, the majority of the earmarks in terms of dollar amount and just number of them went almost exclusively to Senate Republican leadership. You know, to projects that were in the districts of Joe Scarnati, Jake Corman, and Pat Brown, who's the appropriations chairman over there. You know, and it really is unfortunate that we have, you know, the House has done a much better job of trying to rein in spending than what the Senate has, you know, and you know, not having, you know, people over there who are really pushing back as strenuously as necessary for that. I guess, and you had brought up the, you know, Representative Warner's bill. I guess the only pushback that I would offer, you know, because I we're in favor of that legislation, but the one kind of note of caution that I would put out there for people is a lot of the people who have signed on as co-sponsors of, you know, taxpayer protection acts, both in the House and the Senate, have repeatedly voted for budgets that exceed that spending cap.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a really, really disappointing thing to see. You know, if you're sponsoring this legislation and you say you support this in theory, you know, here's a chance in practice to vote against budgets that exceed that. And you know, we just haven't seen that. But
I tell you what I think part of that problem is. And part of that problem is when you don't know what that budget's going to look like until 24, 36, 48 hours ahead of time. I ultimately made the decision to not vote on that budget probably 20 minutes before I voted, 15 minutes. And that's because that's how long it took me to get through it and actually understand it and understand what the real spending number was. So it takes time, and I wish we had more time to do that. But, you know, I think in general, we have to continue to try to hold the line, and we have to do the things that here's what I say, and you and I have had this conversation 100 times offline. Government doesn't do anything. Government doesn't get a penny until it takes it off somebody else. And I'm not going to take people's money off of them unless I absolutely positively have to in order to fund necessary and required programs.
Yeah, and a lot of the you know, the special funds, the shadow budget that you referred to, absolutely are not necessary, you know, programs. We have $250 million a year racehorse development fund. We have a whole variety of other corporate welfare built into the shadow budget, but also in the regular budget, where, you know, we are taking money from Peter and giving it to Paul.
Right.
You know, and it really, that's one of the reasons when we take a look at Pennsylvania's economic growth that we really fare so badly. You know, you look at the energy sector, you look at our natural resources, you look at our location. Pennsylvania really should be the East Coast version of Texas.
Yep, I agree. I use that terminology a lot.
But here we are, you know, kind of languishing. I was looking at some information earlier today, and Pennsylvania's GDP just in the state is actually the size of Saudi Arabia. I mean, wow. Which is phenomenal, but, you know, what's happening to that? How have we been served by the folks who are kind of dictating policy in the General Assembly? But yeah, so the budget process, and I guess me being cynical, you know, do you think that the delay in getting the information to members of the General Assembly is something that is done on purpose? You know, they don't actually, leadership doesn't actually want people to have the time to go through and review things as thoroughly as necessary? Or am I being too cynical?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I've learned in this job in 2.5 years is not to challenge people's intent. And so I really try not to challenge the intent of what people are trying to do. But, you know, I do look at the facts and what the information is. The only thing I know is that I wish we had more time to review it. And that'll be something that I continue to push for. I know other members will continue to push for. And, you know, I think we have to just understand that all 203 members represent different parts across this entire Commonwealth and with different needs and different requirements. And we ought to make sure that we have the ability to understand every single thing that we're voting on before you vote on it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about this, there's only 254 people that can truly impact policy from a voting standpoint in Pennsylvania, right? 203 members in the House, 50 in the Senate, and the governor. So, you know, I think that you better take that job seriously and put a lot of work into it.
Yeah, I would definitely, and I wish that more members of the General Assembly and, you know, the governor, you know, took that approach. You know, we're not talking about chump change. We're talking about just on the general fund side of things, what was it, $34 billion. And then, you right. know, you add in the federal spending and then the shadow budget portions, and it's a lot of money. And there are unfortunately far too few people who take the time to try and understand where that money's actually going.
And don't forget, and I hate to keep reiterating the exact same point, but I'm a whole lot more interested in where that money comes from.
Yeah.
And,
oh, absolutely.
What is it, you know, this comes out of people's pockets. And I look at people that come in here, and I'm not going to ask them to pay more money.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons we appreciate, you know, at CAP, we appreciate, you know, what you're doing in Harrisburg and, you know, folks who kind of take that same approach. I guess so. Is there anything that you could point to within the budget that was obviously, you know, the no tax increases? I mean, for me, that's a fairly low bar, you know, to call something a success. But was there anything that you looked at in there and said, you know, yeah, this is a win for taxpayers. This was a really good thing that's included. You know, it didn't necessarily get to the threshold where you'd vote for the budget because of it, but it was a plus.
Yeah, I think two things. Number one, well, I'll talk in principle on one and then in fiscal on the other. There's an education bill that was included in that we got done that was really, really, really important for the safety and security of students. And what it did was it changed the way that folks can hire security guards in schools. It's more complicated than that, but I'm breaking it down to a very simple level, where instead of having necessarily school employees, They can use outside security firms, which oftentimes are much better than having to go through an interview process and having friends hire friends for that type of a job. That's a big deal. So I guess there's some financial impact there, but the big win there is, and that's a huge issue, that people are worried about, and I have a little boy, as you know, he's 4 years old, and so I worry about that when he goes to school. The second thing that I thought was a win for taxpayers was we got rid of the cash payments on welfare. And that was something that was a hot topic, but ultimately you shouldn't be giving welfare recipients cash payments without understanding where that money is spent. Remember, they don't get that money unless somebody else takes money out of their pocket and writes a check to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. So yeah. that cash payment system, I thought that cash issue was, a really important one. And the other thing is, you know, when I look at this, that's just about fiscal responsibility.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that cash payment system. This was actually something that was done away with. I don't remember which year it was actually done away with under the Corbett administration.
Yep.
And then it was taken to court, and the Supreme Court actually decided that it was the legislation that did away with it was enacted improperly.
Correct.
Now, Governor Corbett, just correct me if I get the history wrong, Governor Corbett did not reinstate it because the General Assembly had not allocated funds for it. They didn't budget for it.
Correct.
And then Governor Wolf came into office, and even though the General Assembly had not budgeted for the item, he reinstituted the program.
That's correct.
Okay.
Without the money there. So that's that type of overspending that we're talking about from the executive branch.
Yeah. So people understand this money, the money that Governor Wolf spent on this program was allocated to something else or into kind of a general operating expense, and then it was diverted into cash assistance programs.
That's correct.
Okay. So this legislation that was passed was really just almost a second bite at the apple to do away with something that had never been reauthorized.
Correct. And that would then prohibit the governor from continuing to circumvent the legislature. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you're at the federal or the state level, the legislature does or at least should control the purse strings. We're the ones that are closest to the people. So that was a decision that was made, and I think was an important one. And by the way, there are things that I think if you're on welfare, you should be able to purchase with those cards to basically live. So if somebody wants to have that conversation, I'm okay with that.
Right.
Right. But ultimately, let's fix the problem. Let's not just continue to act like there isn't a problem and then, you know, move the other route where we're shifting money around and not acting in what I believe is really an ethical manner.
Yeah. I would completely agree with you just from, you know, even when you're just looking at it from a process perspective. You know, we have these rules in place in order to make sure that spending, you know, is approved by the General Assembly. The General Assembly, as you mentioned, has the power of the purse. That is one of the defined responsibilities in Pennsylvania's Constitution. And then, you know, having the governor not only decide that he should take that responsibility, but then, you know, it just kind of becoming, there was quite the heated exchange in the Senate over the cash assistance piece, if I'm not mistaken. But that was definitely a win for taxpayers. There's another piece that was included, not exactly in the budget, but it had to do with some voting machines and things, you know, of that nature. Can you explain a little bit about what the genesis was for that?
Yeah, the governor made an executive decision in which he basically forced new voting machines in Pennsylvania. There was not money allocated for that. So to put it in very blunt terms, the legislature bailed out the governor for his decision and has allocated money to go to these counties to pay for these voting machines.
Yeah. So if the legislature hadn't done this, this would have been something that either the counties would have had to raise taxes in order to cover a new expense for, or they just would have been in violation of Pennsylvania's election proceedings, right?
Correct. That's correct.
And in theory, the governor could have taken them to court in order to force them to buy new voting machines anyway.
Yeah, and that's exactly what he said would have happened. at the end of the day, this is another example of executive overreach. And I don't like executive overreach at the federal level. I don't like it at the state level. You know, I think it's inappropriate. I'm not a big fan of all these executive orders that are happening. I wasn't a fan of them when Bush 41 or President Clinton or Bush 43 or Obama or Trump do it.
Yeah.
To me, there's a process in place. If you don't like the process, let's fix the process. Let's not circumvent the rules in order to just get what we want. I think our founding fathers laid out a system that, while not perfect, creates consensus. And that's what we should be striving for as legislators, as well as the executive branch in which we work with. Work with, but not for.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the co-equal, separate branches. And also, in the legislation that allocated the funding for the voting machines, there was also a surprisingly controversial piece that did away with straight ticket voting, right?
Yep.
That's just kind of a basic thing. It's interesting because George Washington was really and the founding fathers were really afraid of the idea of political parties to begin with.
Correct.
They felt, that it would encourage factionalism, which we see today, but it would also encourage, almost lazy voting, where you don't actually know anything about the people you're casting a vote for.
Well, what's interesting about that is it's interesting that those were in their words in those founding fathers. But when you actually go back and look, they created very tight coalitions.
Yeah.
And while they didn't call them political parties and they talked like that, and trust me, these guys were smarter than me, you, and all the other people I work with there combined. But it's just interesting, and I'm kind of a history nerd, that while they said one thing, their actions maybe behaved in a different manner. Here's the thing as it deals with straight party voting. I wasn't super passionate about it either way. Do I think it's fine to have a straight party vote on there? Sure. Do I think it's fine if you don't and people select individual candidates? I do. I think at the end of the day, it's on the candidate's responsibility to go out and make the case for themselves, regardless of what party they are. And, as I'm a conservative Republican. But in my district, we had numerous people that literally had Bernie Sanders signs next to Aaron Bernstein signs. And you'd go talk to these people and you'd say, hey, why are you supporting me? Why is this? And it was because you went and you talked to them and you understood what they wanted out of government. And while they may not agree with you on issues or every issue, at least they know you care and at least they know you're shooting them straight. So, I think, to be honest with you, that's on the individual candidate's job to go out and make that case to why they ought to have the right and privilege to serve the constituency in which they're asking for.
Yeah, it's amazing, how upset it made people that they might actually have to work to get votes.
I'll tell you what I was really surprised about. What I was really surprised about were just from an incumbent protection standpoint, and I think that politics is built around an incumbent protection system, complicated and wonky rules to make sure that incumbents get reelected. Right.
Yeah.
I think that's unfortunate. That's terrible. And as I've approached many things to try to get some of those at least changed or removed. But from an incumbent standpoint, you are much better off if there is not straight party voting, just because you're naturally going to have higher name ID than the individual that you're running against. So it didn't make sense to me that people were upset about that, especially when many of those people that were so upset about it were the ones that are consistently taking advantage of what I call the IPP, the incumbent protection program that incumbency provides you as a candidate.
Yeah, yeah. Switching gears a little bit, I did want to touch quickly on some legislation that you'll be working on in the fall on taxpayer-funded lobbying. Could you give us a quick explanation as to what that is?
Yeah, I'll try to be as quick as I go through the roof on this issue. But there are literally taxpayer-funded lobbyists. So there are these groups, and I'll give you an example. There's the Pennsylvania Boroughs Association, or the County Commissioners Association, or the Township Association. And they go in, and they actually lobby other representatives to go in and give more money to municipalities in the form of taxes, right?
Right.
Well, as you know, where in the world do these people get their money from? They get it from dues from the municipalities who get their money from taxing people. So we actually have lobbyists there that are paid for by taxpayers.
Yep.
That are coming to lobby to raise taxes on taxpayers. And that's absolutely ludicrous. You know, it's just not something that we ought to have in the United States of America. And here in Pennsylvania, we're doing everything we can do to try to stop it. We have several different strategic ways to do it. I'm not going to share all those on a radio show because you never want to give the opposition, and I believe they are the opposition, what you're really going to try to do with it. But we have a large bill that would eliminate all of them. And if that's not the case, then we're going to try to pick them off one by one by one in the individual codes that they exist. So whether that's the borough's code or the township code, et cetera, they really should not be using taxpayer money to lobby for anything, let alone for higher taxes.
Yeah. So I have kind of an interesting question for you. Have you looked at, so I know some local chamber of commerces actually accept county government as members. Have you looked at what impact that will have on, you know, local chamber of commerce's ability to lobby for whatever?
Yeah, not so much. And here's the thing. That's not really where my concern is, because a lot of that is advocating, okay?
Right.
So a lot of, and that's very different than lobbying. Advocating is saying, hey, here's what we, you know, here's some ideas. This is where we stand. This is our set of principles. I'm okay with that type of thing. I'm talking about actually coming up to Harrisburg and lobbying on particular bills, particular legislation that raises taxes on people.
Right.
And you know, with a registered lobbyist that they're hiring to go do that. Most of these chamber folks, they have an executive director. You know, I have their cell phones or emails, and they'll shoot me something. Hey, this sounds like a really good bill. We're in support of this. That's not really the stuff that I'm talking about. And remember, dues might be $100 or something. That's not, while every penny matters, okay? What I'm talking about is when something's entirely paid for by taxpayers to raise money on taxpayers. I go and I have that conversation with people. They look at me like I'm out of my mind and it's not real until I actually show them specific examples. The Burrs Association just had a big bash, you know, luxury. Everybody come in, get your mixed drinks, nice shrimp at the table, all those types of things, all paid for by taxpayers to lobby representatives. Obviously, I didn't go to that. But, you know, it's frustrating when you see it, and I think that people deserve better, and their money could be spent in much better ways.
Absolutely. And on that happy note, we are going to thank you for taking the time to talk to us today. Again, my guest today was Representative Aaron Bernstein from the 10th District, 10th House District. And I'm Leo Knepper, CEO of the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. If you want to learn more about our organization, please visit our website at empowerpa.org. And again, Aaron, thanks very much for taking time out of your day today.
Leo, thank you so much and appreciate the work that you guys have done before, do today, and will continue to do tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you.
A wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it has earned. This is the sum of good government, taken from Thomas Jefferson's first inaugural address, March 4th, 1801.